This Quest for Gold sponsorship is brought to you by ComEd, providing options and resources to businesses looking to make the switch to electric vehicles. Learn more at comed.com/clean.
Welcome to Quest for Gold. We are 77 days away from the opening ceremonies of the Paris Summer Games in France. I'm Ryan Breaux. This is episode number 40. We start today in France because the torch relay has begun in the host country. The Olympic flame arrived on a three-mast ship for a welcoming ceremony in Marseille Thursday. It's begun an 11-week journey where it will pass through 450 French cities and towns. 10,000 bearers will carry the flame along the route, which will end at the opening ceremony in Paris on July 26th. The U.S. Triathlon team trials take place this weekend in Colorado. It's the final event for elite U.S. athletes to qualify for Paris in the event. Five U.S. wrestlers will compete in Istanbul to try and secure the remaining Olympic qualifying positions. It will be up to a committee to decide if Caitlin Clark will suit up for Team USA Women's 5-on-5 this summer. Clark was put on the active pool roster, however, has yet to take part in a training camp with the team, but the last camp they had fell during the NCAA Women's Final Four in Cleveland. Clark obviously was a little occupied. There will be no further camps until the team is named. It's no sure thing for Clark. As dominant as she's been in the NCAA, she's competing with some of the best who ever played for the few cherished positions on the Team USA roster, including Chelsea Gray, Kelsey Plum, Jewel Lloyd, Sabrina Ionescu, and Alicia Gray. It's going to be a tough call for the committee, made up mostly of former women's basketball players and current coaches. Two likely Olympians, track and field star Sha'Carri Richardson and Minnesota Timberwolves standout Anthony Edwards, have joined Sprite for a rehashing of the 1990s ad campaign, Obey Your Thirst. Both are featured in new commercials for the drink. USA Fencing is raising concerns over biased judges who could impact qualifications and the actual Olympic Games as well. Fencing judging does have a subjective element to it. U.S. Fencing suspended two judges over questionable calls, and more may be considered moving forward over concerns of the integrity of the sport. We know one more team that will play the U.S. men's soccer team in Paris this summer. Guinea's under-23 team qualified with a 1-0 win over Indonesia. They'll play in Group A with the U.S. 2020 Tokyo Olympic volleyball player Jordan Poulter has a chance at a second gold medal. Her first one she actually got stolen. Don't worry, she got it back. In this week's Athlete Spotlight, we talk with the setter a little bit about the expectations going into Paris. She still hasn't officially made this team. I had a chance to have a roundtable discussion with the former University of Illinois standout, as well as some fellow reporters.
All right, so what's the process now? They haven't selected the team, right?
Correct.
So what is the next 100 days look like for you and the team in general?
Yeah, so we, girls are still filtering back in from their overseas seasons, their professional seasons abroad, and so within the next couple of weeks, we should have a good bulk of the team back. We have a couple athletes that are in the Champions League finals over in Europe, so they won't join us the first week of our BNL tournament, which is our first and big, I guess, biggest tournament of the summer aside from the Olympics. So we will play 2 weeks of BNL. It is a total of 5 weeks, and 4 of those weeks are competition weeks. So we will go to Brazil and then Japan, and then before our third week in Arlington, Texas, we will make the roster and unveil the roster in Arlington.
Is it a tough moment for everyone? Because you want to make the team, you want to gel, you want to come together, but you also know some people aren't going to be going out to Paris.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it is a really hard and fun balance of the unknown of it and being very high pressure, and you're still trying to pull the best out of yourself along with your teammates. So, yeah, it's kind of a gnarly time right now up until, I mean, it's from this moment through the end of the Olympics, it's kind of go, go, go.
What went well in Tokyo as a team? Like, what can you pull from that going into this experience?
Yeah, I think what really set us apart as a team is that we had 12 individuals who were committed to filling whatever role was needed of them in the moment. You know, we had a couple injuries in the middle of the tournament. Jordan Thompson went down with an ankle, and then a couple matches later, I went down with the exact same injury. And you know, the Annie Drews came in and did really well for us at opposite to sub for JT, and then Micah came in and set the rest of the match against Italy, and then on to the quarterfinals against Dominican, and was able to get us to the semis.
Where's the gold medal now?
The gold medal is actually upstairs.
Talk a little bit about that whole experience.
Yeah. I had shown some friends my gold medal when I was up in LA, and we trained down in Anaheim, so I had forgotten that I had took it up and left it in my middle console of my car. I went home after training to take a shower, and within the 20 minutes that I was inside and came back out to my car, it had been broken into. So, right place, right time, and for me, just some negligence, and unfortunately, a little bit of... But yes, it was recovered. From what I understand, it was found outside of a barbershop in a McDonald's bag. So, I think the man who had allegedly or stolen it, his name was also Jordan, ironically, and I'm sure he tried to pawn it off, and no one's gonna take a gold medal that says women's volleyball on the bottom from some dude. So I'm sure he just pitched it, and then luckily was recovered.
How's Karcher's approach differ since Tokyo as before Tokyo?
Yeah, I think he is really great in the sense of there's not a lot of comparison with him. We're never trying to replicate the team that we were last quad. I think he knows that you have to maximize the pieces that you have in the moment in order to achieve the best results you can. And so I feel actually like his approach is pretty similar. There's not a lot of external noise. It's what can we do today that gets us better and holding us to a standard that that hopefully over time will compile into a really nice body of work for us.
Jordan said he's really good at telling hard truths. Telling you guys really hard truths.
Yeah.
But in a
yeah.
Can you think of an example where you've been receiving that?
Yeah, I think he cares so much about the program and about each of us as individuals, and so he never wants to feel like he's misleading you, and so he'll be pretty honest with his thoughts if you ask for them. And I feel like where people go wrong with any coaching that they receive is if you're projecting your own kind of discomfort about a situation onto what someone else is telling you. And so for me, I approach every conversation with him as I respect this person and I respect his opinion and I'm open to feedback and learning. So I've seen him give hard truths. I don't know that I have received many because I agree with a lot of what his assessments are about myself.
What about the first time you competed internationally and sort of how that differs from going into the Olympics?
Yeah.
Like, how that makes you feel, like what it's like to represent the United States of America versus
totally.
Where you started out?
Yeah, the summer of 2019 was the first time that I had been on the senior national team. I was playing with athletes like Jordan Larson, Kelsey Robinson, Kim Hill, just girls that I had looked up to for a long time who I'd watched in prior Olympics. And so there's some nerves there. You know, I'm setting people wanting to be really good for them. And now there's a fun level of comfort in the sense of, you know, these women are some of my good friends and people that I've built really strong relationships with. And so in big moments, it's easy to lean on each other and... while also expecting, you know, a lot of one another. So it's a fun balance, and I think it creates an atmosphere where there's no complacency.
How has your preparation changed for this cycle versus last cycle? I mean, setting aside all the COVID craziness.
Yeah.
But like 6 months out before, or actually 1 month, 3 months out last time around versus 3 months out this time around, how are you both feeling differently and also preparing differently?
Yeah.
Or maybe not at all.
Yeah, no. Having come off of not played internationally for since December of 2022, you know, I'm hard at work every day trying to maximize the time that I have because I didn't play a pro season this year because I was rehabbing my knee. So there's a little bit of a fun and just curiosity of what that's going to feel like, my first match back in BNL, and the emotions with that, and also the excitement. It's a moment that I've been waiting for a long time after this knee injury. So my approach is a little different in the sense of I feel pretty secure in myself as an athlete, yet there's also a big, you know, unknown with what it's going to look like coming back.
Does it feel different being the, you know, defending gold medalist versus trying to chase that with more time in team history?
Yeah, I think what we did in Tokyo was nothing short of, incredible. And I think what's interesting about our group is we don't really compare the experience that we've had this squad to the last squad. You know, with any team, you have a different makeup of people and different strengths and weaknesses. And I think the fun part is we're still trying to pick the lock on what our best combination of people are. And I know our staff is working hard at that and what they decide for the 12 individuals who make the roster. But I had something on the back half of your question. You asked about,
does it feel different to be the defending gold medalist versus trying to chase that for the first time?
Yeah, I don't know. I still feel like I have a very fresh approach to it. There's not a sense of, oh, we won last time, so we're going to do well this time. It's no, we have to fight and claw for everything if we want to earn a spot on the podium.
Did the gold medal push professional women's volleyball in the United States further? I know a lot of you guys go overseas, and I know a lot would love to stay in America and make money here. I mean, did it move the needle? I mean, do we need more gold medals for that to move even further?
I mean, I think everyone saw the record-breaking match at the University of Nebraska that broke the attendance record for any female sporting event ever globally this past August. But We have three women's professional leagues that will be happening in total starting in January. We have Athletes Unlimited, who has volleyball, basketball, softball, and a couple other sports. And then PBF started this past spring. And then I'm playing for a pro league called League One Volleyball, LOVB. And there's a bunch of us Olympians and former and current national team members who will be playing for that league. That our preseason will start in November of this year. So it's cool, these opportunities domestically. We're hoping to be at the forefront of some change because I think we see how much this country can get on board with women's sports and enjoys watching them, especially after this NCAA basketball run. And it feels like a cool wave to be riding right now.
How did you make that decision about playing in that league? What attracted you? Like, what's special about that league to you as opposed to an Athletes Unlimited or one of the other options you had?
Yeah, I really believe in the mission of the league and, the kind of grassroots effort of being connected to the community and the clubs in your city and being able to grow from that. I really appreciate how much time they've spent on the back end. We've spent 5 years trying to develop and get investors and really go about this the right way to make it hopefully one of the best leagues in the world in the next 5-10 years. And in this next season, we've got athletes, both American athletes and international athletes, that I think, if anything, we're going to shake up the international market for how professional women's volleyball is viewed.
Because it is such an international market, I mean, you obviously know other players, play with them, play against them. I mean, but when you're going to Paris, is there anyone you're especially looking forward to seeing or playing against? Or
one of my best friends that I played with when I was in Italy, Jovana Stevanovic. She's Serbian. She's a very good middle blocker, and I look forward to seeing her. And also, it's fun to compete against your friends. I feel like Brazil is always a really fun team, playing against Gabi, and I mean the Turkish and I know a lot of the Italian players having played both with them and against them in the Italian league, and then there's a handful of Turkish players as well that you know you kind of develop these loose friendships with. You're at the same tournaments and your best friends play with them overseas, and so it feels like you kind of know them without actually having spent a lot of time with them.
Talking about Jordan Larson coming back, are you surprised to see her back, and what has she meant to the program over the years?
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised to see her back.
Have you had these doubts when she kind of stepped away a little bit? Or?
You know, at the end of the day, I want Jordan to be happy in whatever she's doing, and I think she realized that what makes her the most happy is playing volleyball. And I think she's still in a position to where she can be really good and help us out, both in her experience and what she sees as a player and what she's able to communicate. It's almost like having another coach on the floor with you is really cool. And like I said, having been on this arc of having watched Jordan both at Nebraska, then on the USA team, to then being teammates with her and friends with her, and now watching her go for her fourth Olympics is feels really special. She looks great. Yeah, she looks good. She's never gonna do something and not full send in it. So. I don't make the roster, but I'm optimistic of her chances.
Do you guys refer to her as the governor?
Yes.
Do you really?
I mean, we call her Gov, yeah. Yeah.
Well, how'd she take that?
I think she likes it. I don't know. I don't know where it originated. I feel like I've been told the story. I think somebody, a broadcaster once, was like, well, she's the governor of Nebraska, practically, and... how she got the. She is famous there. When she goes, if you're there with her in Nebraska, people know who she is.
So. Volleyball's pretty big in Illinois too. I mean, what's it like? You grew up in Colorado, but you from Maysville.
Yep.
When you're back in Illinois, what's it like? Do you have a sense post Tokyo of this kind of whole momentum? You saw Caitlin Clark and see it, track and field, and yep. Sitting in the block and all that. Is there just a sense of like a different vibe right now?
Yeah, I think it is cool. Club volleyball is the biggest youth girls sport in America, so it's. I feel like if you don't know someone whose kid is playing, then it's their cousin, or just there's a connection within 2 degrees of everyone connected to volleyball, I feel like, in some way. And I think just social media helps for sure to just expose kids to a different level of volleyball, and so it is cool going back and having people, if I go out in Chicago, there's a couple people who will stop me and acknowledge and just, say hi, which is really cool.
Strangest
place I've ever been.
Yeah, that's a great question. I was in New York actually two summers ago, and just walking in Soho, and someone was like, hey, we had just come back from a tournament overseas, and someone was like, hey, my mom just watched you guys like last week, and had us take a picture and say hi to his mom. So
do the younger players play differently? I mean, has the game changed? I mean, obviously it's spread so much.
Yeah.
It's grown so quickly. And there's lots of video clips and there's all sorts of different things. Does a player like Jordan play differently than who's the best young player who's new to the group this year? Or best two, I don't mean to make you pick among your friends.
No, we've got some really talented young players. You know, Asia O'Neill just came out of Texas and she's a really talented middle blocker. I think with anything, there's a little bit of a generational gap in like the grittiness of just, I think, what players like Jordan and Kelsey, I think, were brought up under, just a little bit more, like more time in the gym, more intensity from coaches. I think there's, and that's not to say there's a discrepancy in level of play. I think just how the mental approach sometimes is or is perceived, you just notice it a little bit more. I would say even from myself and them. There's a different level of intensity, I think. With
at what level? Does that mean the older players are more intense than the younger players? Or the younger players?
Yeah. I think there's there's a little bit more grit, I would say, and maybe that's speaking, you know, in our program, you know, they've lived through some cultural changes in our program, and it's a little bit different now than it was, you know, training in Colorado Springs, doing double days, training 8 hours a day. You know, now we go hard for the hours that we have in the gym, but it's nothing like what. You know, Jordan went through when she was first in the gym.
Is there where's the cutoff between the generations?
Good question.
Is COVID had something to do with it? Is that NIL having to do with it?
You know, I can't speak to how athletes in general are. I'm not around them enough to really give an opinionated take on all young athletes. But I'm sure that there's a little bit of, I mean, there has to be something with NIL and knowing that if you give your word to one school but can freely, you know, choose to leave. I mean, there's both good and bad with that, I think. Not every school is a good fit for everyone, but also the easy accessibility of being able to just willy-nilly kind of not follow through on a commitment seems like it creates just a different mindset.
Most of you guys have played in Europe, a lot in Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
Would you agree that it's coming back? I mean, there's some coaching methods in Europe, especially in Eastern Europe, and even in Italy,
yeah,
that would apply at University of Texas, University of Illinois.
Oh, for sure. I mean, when we're in college, we're coddled a lot, and you know, and for the better. It's not like we want you know, transactional coaching, which is what overseas is. You know, you're being paid to do a job, and there are, you know, whether it's your coach or your management or your president, if you're not getting the results, then people are going to be pretty harsh with what they think of your performance and what you should do to improve. So it's kind of a rude awakening a little bit. You know, you think that coming from college, going to the next level, being a professional athlete, you think it's going to be this like miraculous, I don't know, jump. And because especially being American, growing up, you see how the NBA, NFL, you see how male professional athletes are treated, and so you kind of have a little bit of a false image in your head of what that looks like. It's humbling.
But when you talk about the grittiness, is part of that just parts being a smarter coach and knowing that 8 hours in the gym?
I think so. I think there's. I think Karch. Yeah, Karch follows the research, and I think he knows that recovery is important. He knows rest is important, and he knows that we can maximize a lot in a 3 hour practice. You know, that's not to say we don't get extra reps here and there, but I think he knows that the happier we are outside the gym, the better we come into the gym and perform as well. So that balance is important. Okay.
Are you living in Chicago now?
No, we train out in Anaheim, so I am in Fullerton, California.
Go back to Chicago much? You still have family to get, because you're from Naperville, right?
I was born in Naperville. Both of my parents, my dad's from the Chicago suburbs, and my mom is from Charleston, Illinois, which is more central. But yeah, we've got some family friends that still live there, and I've got some family more in central Illinois. But all my friends from college are still there, so I try to get back once or twice a year. But I feel like getting anywhere from California is like a hike, you know?
On the panel, you talked about what it was like having that moment in 2021 at an empty arena with nobody there. Did that, obviously, it was still an incredible moment for you guys. Does it at all, like, affect what that memory is for you and how you have processed just the whole journey? And
you know, I don't think it affects the memory. I think there's always a part of me, and I'm sure my teammates, that wonders if there had been a crowd, would things have been different? You know, you never know. But I think one of the coolest things about it only being us there is, you know, I've been told people quickly go off with friends and family, you know, post play. And it was cool that all 12 of us got to just, you know, rejoice in the victory together and really celebrate that for the next, you know, 24 hours till we all flew home.
What did you do? What were those 24 hours like?
Well, it involved a lot of alcohol. yeah, just telling stories, sharing memories, and I don't know, just knowing that group of 12 people, you know, would probably not be in the same room together again for a long time after that. You know, we had a couple people retire and start families, and just, yeah, it was a special, special time.
Are you looking forward to Paris and the crowds? And
very much so.
What about Paris? And
I think just seeing, you know, the Olympics and how the world turns out for this event is so cool. It's something that, you know, a lot of the times, regardless of what's happening in the world, brings people together. And I think seeing one, I'm so curious to see what the venue's like. I've seen just brief photos of, you know, the beach volleyball venue that's going to be under the Eiffel Tower, and that'll be amazing. But yeah, I think what I'm not looking forward to is the lack of air conditioning that is present throughout Europe. But we're really fortunate to play for Team USA, and I think they're hooking us up with some units in our individual rooms, so it'll be nice.
I spent a lot of time imagining what winning gold would feel like. Was there anything that was harder about winning gold than you expected?
Some people have talked about, like, letdown or expectations, or I don't know if any of that.
No,
you felt
I don't think that there was anything along the journey that was, like, a disappointment about it, or that, that wasn't enjoyable, honestly. We went through, I think, in that quad, there were a lot of us fresh, you know, fresh out of college kids that were able to make an impact on the team, and I think, you know, we were bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, like, wow, this is so cool, and luckily had our veterans to lean on to kind of guide us through, you know, some bigger, harder moments and share their experience, so.
Do you know how many people you'll have in Paris, and are you excited for your family to get to embarrass you in person?
I don't know the exact number of people, but if I make the roster, I'm hoping to see a lot of faces in the stands, and yeah, I think, you know, just as much for me, I'm excited for them to be able to, you know, to be able to watch your child compete on that stage. You know, I'm sure it's every parent's dream, and I know how proud they were of me to have made the last one, and I think for them to be there will be a really special moment.
The women's indoor volleyball team will have a tournament in Rio. 14 players will go to that later this month, but the Olympic team likely won't be named until the first week in June. That'll do it for this episode of Quest for Gold. Keep it right here for more updates and athlete interviews as we move closer and closer to the Olympics in Paris. I'm Ryan Burr. We'll see you here next week.